Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, 15 lines down. Gemara is continuing to discuss this machloka between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai with regards to what is the status of a Bechor Baal Mum, whether it's uniquely eaten by the Kohanim, or are other people allowed to partake of the Bechor. In the Mishnah, we have a view that even Ovdei Kohavim can partake of it. We saw in the Braita that was Shitat Rabbi Akiva in Beit Hillel, that even Ovdei Kohavim can participate. The Tanakam believes, even though Ovdei Kohavim can't participate, but still Yisraelim, Zarim, can still participate. So it's a fundamental machloket as to what's the status of Bechor Baal Mum. Does it remain a Matnat Kuhuna, which can only be eaten by Kohanim? Or is it something that becomes Mamona Kohanim, where they can give it to whomever they choose? Anybody can participate or partake of the Bechor. So now here we have a continuation of that in another Braita. Tanabanan, Bechor, Eim Achilin Otol the Nidot, Divrei Beit Shammai. According to Beit Shammai, Nidot cannot partake of the Bechor, meaning that they are Tmeim, and that causes a problem. Now we know that Tmeim are allowed to eat Bechor Baal Mum, that's explicit in the Torah, with regards to the Bechor Baal Mum in Perek Tedvav and Parshat Re'eh, where it says, Yisharecha Tochalenu HaTmei V'Tor Yachtav, Katzvi V'Chayal. So it's clear that Tmeim can eat the Bechor Baal Mum. What Beit Shammai is saying over here is that not all Tmeim are equal. And they're saying that when it comes to Tmeim like Nidot, and Tosfot adds over here, it would be true of a Baal Keri as well. And we'll see in a second in the Gemara, the formulation of Beit Shammai's position means any Tuma Hayotze Migufo. Any time where the Tuma emanates from the individual itself, they are the source of the Tuma, it's not external Tuma, then you're precluded from participating or partaking in the Bechor. Therefore they say that Bechor ain machilin otol nidot, divrei Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel omrei machilin otol nidot. Beit Hillel says you can give it to nidot for the exact same reason. The pasuk says, atamei v'hatahor, that whether you're tamei or tahor, you can eat it. My time in the Beit Shammai, dichtiv. Ubsara miyeh l'ach. So that's the pasuk that we call from Korach, that says that the basar of the Bechor will be just like the chazeh atnufa and shokei yamin, those matnot that come off the shlamim. Mahatam nidot lo, just like by shlamim, or the matnot kuna that come away from kochim kalim, nidot may not participate. Avacha nidot lo, so it's over here, and nida cannot participate or eat from the Bechor. This goes back to the fundamental reason why Beit Shammai believes that the Bechor can only be eaten by the Kohanim, is because the Bechor is compared to the Chazeh Tnufa and Shokei Yamin, those matnot that come from the Kodshim Kalim to the Kohanim. And similarly, over here, they're going to say the same thing. Just like over there, Tmeim can't participate, so it's over here, Tmeim can't participate. Beit Hillel, Hani Milei Tam. Again, Beit Hillel says, like they did before, that's only speaking about a Bechor Tam. Aval Baal Mum, Atamei Vator, Tochalenu, which is that they're quoting the pasuk from Re'eh, which is Vasharecha Tochalenu Atamei Vator Yachdav, Katzvi V'Chayav. And there it's clearly talking about a Bechor Baal Mum, because it's Chiyah Baal Mum Piseach Oiver. That's the context of the psukim there about a Bechor Baal Mum. So therefore you see the Torah explicitly says that a Tamei Nator can partake of a Bechor Baal Mum. So now here, as opposed to before where Beit Hillel just said that a Baal Mum is not included in Saram, it's only talking about a Bechor Tam. As we pointed out yesterday, it's not so clear, because as the Baal Tosfot will point out, anyone who learns the din of Bechor Baal Mum learns it from those psukim in Perek Yud Chet in Parshat Korach. So Bechor Baal Mum is included in there. The Baal Tosfot Niyad said that the logic or the Kal V'Chomer that Beit Hillel brings comes to be a fuke, the hekesh, between Bsaram and Chazeh V'Shok. So the hekesh applies to Bechor Tam, and the Kal V'Chomer applies to Bechor Baal Mum. Over here, Beit Hillel has an explicit pasuk which takes the issue of Tumah off the table for Bechor Baal Mum, because it says it explicitly. Beit Shammai, what is Beit Shammai going to do with that pasuk? They can't ignore the fact that in Parshat Re'eh it says such. So here you see a bifurcation of the din for Beit Shammai. They say that if it's Tumah Hayotze Migufo, then it's governed by the pasuk in Parshat Korach, Ubisaram, that's compared to Chazeh and Shok, whereas the psukim in Re'eh, which say that B'chor Mamum can eat by Tameh and Tahor, that's speaking about regular Tumah, any Tuma that is not emanating from the individual themselves. Anytime that there's Tuma emanating or sourced from the individual themselves, then they may not partake. Because we find such a distinction. The Polig Rachmana, ben Tumah Yutza Alav Migufo, the ben She'en Tumah Yutza Alav Migufo. We do find such a distinction between Tumah emanating from the individual versus Tumah that comes from an external item. The Tanan, we have a Mishnah by Psachim, a Pesach Shabbat Bitumah. If you have Pesach that's brought Bitumah, that means that on Pesach Rishon they brought it Bitumah, because the Pasuk says that Ish Kiyet Tameh the Nefesh Adam. So there it says that if an individual is Tameh Nefesh, then that individual is Nitcheh the Pesach Sheni. But the Gemara darshins from that Ish Velo Tzibur. That's only true if it's an individual. But if it's a Tzibur that is Tameim, then they're not Nitcheim and they do Pesach Bitumah. So that's what's called the Pesach Haba Bitumah. That's what's being described in the Mishnah. Lo yochlu mimenu zavim umitzuraim v'zavot v'nidot v'yoladot. So there, even though they're doing the Pesach v'tumah, there's no dispensation for those individuals that have tumah, yotzei migufo. And so in that case, all these individuals, even though they're doing the Pesach v'tumah, may not partake and participate in the Pesach because their tumah is a higher level of tumah. They could have also brought the fact about the machanot. When it comes to being pushed out of the machanot of your tamei, somebody who's tamei tumat tamei only has to leave the machanesh shchina. Someone who's tamei tumat hayotzei migufan, they have to leave not only the machanesh shchina, they also have to leave machaneh leviyah. So there is a higher standard with regards to the tumah that is yotzei migufo. So Beit Shammai is right in the fact that they're pointing out there is such a distinction. The question is, does that distinction apply over here? And that's what Beit Hillel says. Hatamu de Goli Rachmana over there by Pesach, it says Tamei Nefesh. Ish Kiyet Tamei Nefesh Adam. Over there it speaks specifically about Tumat Hamet. Aval Hacha Tamei Stamakti Lo Shna. Over here it doesn't mention what type of Tumat. It says a Tamei Bator Yachtav. So by Pesach where it specifies Tamei Nefesh, it's talking about Tamei Mate. And therefore all the dinim around Pesach Shiri surround Tamei Mate, which means if you're an individual who's tamei tumat tamei, you need to have the Pesach Sheni. It's true that other tumot, you also end up doing Pesach Sheni. But the diok that you make out of there is that ish nidcheh velot tzibur nidcheh. That's only true by tamei mate. That's not true by other forms of tumah. That's why they're precluded. Over here, the Torah never gives any qualification of the tumah. It just says, b'sharecha tochalenu atamei vator yachta v'katzvi v'chaya. That's just any tamei. Doesn't make a difference what type of tumah. That's why Beit Hillel disagrees. Alright, Tan Rabbanan. Ein margilin v'yom tov. One may not flay the animal, starting with the feet, on yom tov. As Rashi describes over here, there are different ways to flay an animal. The normal way to flay an animal is that you make a cut straight down the middle through its belly, with the belly facing you, from the behind of the animal all the way to the neck, and then you pull off the hide. But there are many times that you want to preserve the hide. And if you do that, you have to work much harder, but you start from the legs, and then you pull off the hide whole, meaning that you don't make cuts in the hide. The reason to do that is that then you can make it into a flask, you can make it into a storage utensil, because it's whole. If you tie up the holes at the ends where the arms and the legs were, then you have something that is a significant kli. So individuals would flay the animal in this manner, because the hide that came off of it would be worth much more, and have more utility. So what we say here is, Ein margilin b'yom tov. When you sheft an animal on yom tov, which you're permitted to do, because it's ochel nefesh, but you're not allowed to flay it in this manner. Ki yotzei bo, similarly, Ein margilin v'bechor, you're not allowed to do this v'bechor, ve'lo b'suleim u'dashim, and not b'suleim u'dashim. So both a b'chor, balmum, and a b'suleim u'dashim, both of those, you're not allowed to flay the animal in that manner. Where it says, Bishlama Yom Tov, I understand why in Yom Tov you can't flay the animal that way. The Katarach Tircha Delo Chazile. You're doing extra work for something that has no utility on Yom Tov. You're right that it'll garner you more value, but on Yom Tov it makes no difference. Either because you can't sell it on Yom Tov, you can't make it into a Kli on Yom Tov, or others say that you're making a Kli on Yom Tov. But all of those are problematic on Yom Tov, and it's a Tircha Yitera. It's much harder to flay the animal this way than to just do the normal flaying of the hide and just to cut through it. So we're not going to allow you to engage in this extra exertion, call it, or investment in the animal, because there's no benefit on Yom Tov. And on Yom Tov, we allow you to do things that are beneficial to Yom Tov. El Bechor Mantano. Who is the author of such a writer? Who can we attribute such a position to that would say by Bechor, you can't do this? Bechor Balmum is Mamona Kohanim. It belongs to the Kohen. Kohen can do with it as he pleases. So So then, why wouldn't you be able to flay it in the way that you choose? Amar Rav Chista Beit Shammai. It's Beit Shammai, our Beit Shammai, that says, Ein machlino to l'nidot. You can't give it to a nida to eat it. So even though it is a Bechor Baal Mum, and you're allowed to eat such a Bechor Baal Mum, it no longer goes on the Mizbeach, Beit Shammai clearly indicate that there is residual Kedusha in the Bechor Baal Mum, to the extent or to the point that a nida may not partake of it. It's true also that our Mishnah says that a zar may not partake of it as well. But that could be for a different reason, which I had noted before, which is that if you look at it as a matnat kuna, just like truma belongs to the kohen to do what he wants with it, nevertheless, a Israel can't partake of it. It doesn't mean just because it's quote-unquote like chulin, or you can eat it, or you can utilize it, that it means that it's automatically open to Zarim. So the fact that Beit Shammai in the Mishnah says that Zarim can't partake of it doesn't show anything about their perspective on a Bechor Baal Mum, whether it's Kadosh or not Kadosh. But you do see from the Breita that says that Nidot are precluded from it, that they think that there's some sort of residual Kedusha over here, similar to Truma, which has a Kedusha which precludes people who are Tmeim from eating Truma or eating Truma Tmeah. So too, by Bechor Baal Mum, even though we saw that there's certain tumot that are waived with regards to it, on the other hand, there are other tumot that are not waived. And what Rav Chista is saying is that's Beit Shammai's position, that there is a residual Kedusha in a Bechor Baal Mum. That Kedusha then leads us to treat it like a Bechor Tam. And by Bechor Tam, Rashi says, we wouldn't allow you to do this type of flame, Mishum Bizayon de Kodoshim, because in a way it denigrates. It is something that is unacceptable treatment of Kodoshim. And the reason being, Rashi peeked ahead to the second half of today's daf, and he gives you the reason being the Bogeim Babasar, because you end up ruining the flesh, the Mitzrei Lachtocha or Kotecha Basar. There's always a trade-off. If you want to maximize the Basar, then you're going to sacrifice the hide to get more Basar. If you are makfit on the or on the hide, and then you want to keep it intact, you're going to have to sacrifice something in order to get it so that the or stays in one piece. And that's going to be the basar. Flaying the animal in this way is at the expense of the basar, which is a bizayon kodoshim. When you have a tam, for sure it's problematic. And now Beit Shammai, who thinks that a Bechor Baal Mum has a status like a Bechor Tam in certain instances, they're going to believe over here also that you can't do this type of flaying because it's a bizayon kodoshim. What about by Psuloi Muktashim, we also said you're not allowed to flay it this way. Mantana, who's the author of that position. Beit Shammai's position is associated with Bechor Baal Mum. We don't know that they would say the same thing by Psuloi Muktashim. And Psuloi Muktashim is post-Pidyon. You've already redeemed it now. And you're allowed to eat it. Hizbach Lachalta. You may not do Giza and Avodah with it, but who says you can't flay it in this manner? Mar says, Amar Rav Chista, Rav Elazar, Rabbi Shimoni. That position can be attributed to Rav Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. That's not. Ayu lefanav shtei chataot. A person has two chataot. As Rashi explains over here, he was mafrish one for the korban chatat, and one to be la'achrayut, as a backup in case you lost the first one. So he's mafrish shtei chataot, one as a backup, one as the primary chatat. Achat mima v'achat balad mum. At this point, one of them is Ro'oy the Mizbeach, it's Tamim, and one of them is a Balat Mum, and it can't go on the Mizbeach. So obviously you're going to put the Tmimah on the Mizbeach, and the Balat Mum is going to come something where you have Achrayut on the Chatat, and the question as to what its status is being addressed here by the Mishnah in Tmurah. And there it says, Tmimah Tikarev, the Tmimah should go on the Mizbeach, Balat Mum Tipadeh, the Balat Mum you redeem. Nishchata Balat Mum, if you shech the balat mum, imach lo nizrukat dama shel tmima, if that was completed before the zrikat dam of the tmima, then muteret, then it's fine. Im mish nizrak dama shel tmima, if the dam of the tmima was already nizrak al mizbeach, then the other chatat, which is a balat mum, is then asura, is problematic. What you have here is the crossover between two dinim. The din of chatat shekipru ba'aleha. If you have a chatat which the owners already contain kapara, then that chatat that's left over is lemita. It's one of the chavesh chataot ha-meitot, tzalach l'moshe mi-sinai. The five chataot are subject to death, meaning that we kotzim oto b'kippah, we lock them up, and then they starve to death. That chatat, which is chatat shekipru ba'aleh, is if the ba'alim, for whatever reason, lost their chatat, then they brought a second chatat to replace the first chatat, and then they find the first chatat, that's called a chatat shekipru ba'aleh. So over here, too, you have two chatot, one to be primary, the other one to be achrayut. We just don't know which is which yet, that's why you're mafrish to them. But once one of them was tamim, one of them was a balad mum, that decided for us which what was happening. The tamim is going to go on his back, the balad mum you're going to redeem, and it's going to use those monies towards another chatat, like any other time when you have psulei amuktashim. But when does it change from being chatat shekipru ba'aleha to a chatat of psulei amuktashim, which is not subject to any of this? So the threshold, according to the chachamim, is shchita. Prior to shchita, the chatat that Balmum still has kedushat aguf associated with it. If at that point you bring the chatat that was tmima on the mizbeach, then you have chatat shekipru ba'aleha. Chatat that the balim would nitkaper, and then that would be in the mita. On the other hand, post shchita, once you've shechted the chatat, then you've already taken it from the world of kodoshim and brought it into the world of psulei hamuktashim. So you have to redeem it, and then you shecht it. That shchita takes it out of the world of Kodashim, and now makes it permissible for you to eat it. That's his bach v'achalta. So that threshold will determine whether it's called a chatat shekipru ba'aleha, or whether it's called psulei hamuktashim, which you're allowed to eat. So if you shecht it, and then you bring the korban, nizrak adam on the mizbeach, then the meat is mutar, and you can eat that psulei hamuktashim. If, on the other hand, you brought the korban that was tamim first, and then only afterwards you did the shechita, you're too late already. Because there it's already classified as a chatat shekipru ba'aleha, and then it's going to be asura. So according to the chachamim, the threshold is shechita for determining whether you've left the world of kedushat haguf and entered into the world of psulei hamukdashim. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, afilu basar b'kteira, even if you're cooking the meat at this point, benizrak damashel tmima, and then you do zrikat adam of the tmima, asura, it renders the one of the psulei hamuktashim asura. According to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, the only way that you can eat this basar psulei hamuktashim is if you complete it all before the tamim is brought on the mizbeach. If you don't complete it before the tamim is brought on the mizbeach, then you have a problem. That must be evidence of the fact that Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon believes that a psulei hamuktashim has some retained kedusha in it, and that retained kedusha persists. Even post shechita psulei hamuktashim, even when it's cooking in the pot, it still has kedusha associated with it. Therefore, when you want to come and flay the animal, here you're post shechita already. According to the chachamim, post shechita, there's nothing to talk about. Of course, psulei hamuktashim, you can do what you want with it post shechita. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says there's still a kedusha in there. And if there's kedusha in there, then you cannot do what you please with this psulei hamuktashim. And therefore, even after it's shechted it, you still can't flay it in that manner, because that is still a bizayon kodashim to do such. So therefore, there will be, we call it, tri-authorship of this braita. The first statement being ledivrei hakol, the second statement being aliba de Beit Shammai, and the third statement being aliba de Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. It could be one tana, but he just follows these different opinions. We're giving attribution to these different opinions as to why the Breita would say the same thing by all of these items. So Gemara asks, Rav Chista lukma kula ki Beit Shammai? Why does Rav Chista just say everything is Beit Shammai? Because they say by Bechor Baal Mum, this is the din. Let's extrapolate that to Psulei HaMuktashim. And say so too by Psulei HaMuktashim. If they believe by Bechor Baal Mum that the residual Baal Mum animal still has kedusha in it, say the same thing with regards to Psulei HaMuktashim. Maybe the reason the Kedusha persists by a Bechor is it's somewhat independent of the Mum, because it happens at birth. Whenever the animal is born, it is Kadosh. That's irrespective of it at a Mum in it at the time of its birth. So just like Bechor is unique in that way, that the Bechor becomes Kadosh, even though it has a Mum that pre-existed the Kedusha, which is not true by Psulei HaMuktashim, so too in the back end, the Bechor Baal Mum maybe has more Kedusha then psulei hamuktashim. About psulei hamuktashim, then kedushat meirechem, since they don't have kedusha meirechem, it's not clear that Beit Shammai's opinion could be extrapolated from Bechor to psulei hamuktashim. So, belukma kula ke Rabbi Elazar ve Rabbi Shimon. So why does Rabbi Chisda say all the opinions of Rabbi Elazar ve Rabbi Shimon? He says it by psulei hamuktashim, certainly he should say it by Bechor. Gemara says, Dilma, Adkan, look, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Otam, Elam, Sulei, Amutashim, Dam, Li, Mei, Le, Mitaspid, you know. Maybe that's only because the Kedusha of Sulei, Amutashim is higher level Kedusha. Evidence of that is the fact that you can redeem it. We spoke about this somewhat counterintuitively. There is a din that if you have strong Kedusha, then you have the ability to redeem it. The weaker your Kedusha is, the less likely you are to be able to redeem it. That's because the stronger the Kedusha, the more autonomous it is from the animal itself, and more you have the ability to transfer it, to move it from one object to another, because it stands independent of the animal. The weaker the Kedusha is, the more dependent it is on that animal, and the less likely you're able to separate it away from the object, and therefore you can't redeem it. So, psulam uktashim, they get a moment in them, you redeem it. Bechor that gets a moment in it, you eat it. You don't redeem it. That means that a psulam uktashim has a higher level of kedusha by the mere fact that it requires redemption. That shows you that it has higher kedusha. So maybe Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon has his opinion only here by psulam uktashim, which have a higher level of kedusha. So maybe in the residual, they also have a higher level of kedusha after the move. Whereas by bechor, where you can't redeem it, maybe that's evidence of the fact that there's lower kedusha in the beginning and also lower kedusha in the end. Maybe bechor bal mum won't have the same din as psulam uktashim for Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. For that reason, Rav Chisda said that the issue of bechor was authored by Beit Shammai, and the issue of psulam uktashim was authored by Rabbi Elazar by Rabbi Shimon. For Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, lately, what does Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon do with the Mishnah called psulam uktashim nikarim bitlis v'nishkalim bilitra? When it comes to all psulam uktashim, you're allowed to sell them in the marketplace, and you're allowed to weigh them on the scales. Meaning, you're able to trade in them, or transact in them, like you would do with regular meat of chulin. And we explained over there, Alma, the kevendika rav kada hektesh. Since hektesh is the beneficiary of that, sharila, it is mutar. Meaning that the reason you can't do it by Bechor and Maser is the beneficiary there are the Baalim. Either the Baalim of the Bechor, which is the Kohen, or by Maser, the Baalim, the owners themselves. Since they are the beneficiaries, we're not allowing you to be Mevase, the Kodoshim, and treat it like commercial meat because the beneficiary is you. In the case of Psulam Kodoshim, where the money's garnered, you will be used then to buy a new Korban, the beneficiary is Kekesh. If Hekdesh, the beneficiary, will allow you to be Mevaseh, the Kodoshim, because we are benefiting Kodoshim in the end from the fact that you are treating it like commercial meat. So you see from that Mishnah, there is such a concept. So why don't you say the same thing over here? If you can garner more money for flaying the animal in that way, why should it not be permitted to flay it by the Psulam Kodoshim in order to charge a higher price for the hide? And in that way, Hekdesh will be the beneficiary. Because the person who comes to redeem it, including the Baalim over here, when they redeem the animal, they're going to pay more for the animal if the residual value is more to them. So if they can then take the hide and sell it off for a high price, they'll redeem the animal at a higher price because the value to them is much higher. So then there'll be value to Hekdesh. Some of Mari, Breder of Kana, Mashimashbiach Mor, Pagamba Basar. This is what Rashi noted before, which is there's a trade-off. So Rashi claims that it's an economic trade-off as well. Not only is it the fact that when you flay the animal, then you have to sacrifice the basar to do that, Rashi says economically, it turns out to be a wash, or even worse, which is that the value you create in the hide, you diminish in the basar. And so therefore, there's no ravcha over here, because Hekdesh in the end is not benefiting from that, so why will we allow you to be mevazet and do the flaying in that way, if Hekdesh is not going to benefit from it? The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom states it is, Dema shemashbiach b'or pogema basar shemechatcho uminavlo. So he seems to think the issue is not just an economic issue, but it's a menuval. You ruin the basar. And that's like a bizayon kodoshim. Not just from an economic standpoint, it's inappropriate. Although the Rabbeinu Gershom continues on here and merges some of the remaining opinions here. It's not clear exactly what he meant in the Gersa, but it's possible that he's saying something different than Rashi, which is that Rashi is speaking about purely economically, that you're giving up value in the basar to get the hide, and in the end, there's no net value that's created over here, so why allow you to be mevazeh of the kodeshim? The Rabbeinu Gershom seems to say, even if there is more value, we're not going to allow you to be menavel the basar. That's a much more serious infringement. It's not simply bizayon kodeshim. It's something where you're ruining the basar, and that you can't do, because that's meant for achila, and not for anything else. And if you do that, then you're in violation of not using it for achila, and that's why you couldn't do such a thing. But Marava, now they bring another answer. Rashi claims that this goes back to the beginning of the sugya, and they're looking for authorship of the Braita. Rav Chisda said, the first line everybody agrees to, the second line is Beit Shammai, the third line is Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. This answer says it's Divrei HaKol. Everybody agrees in the Braita. Because it looks like you're doing work with the Kodushim. So even though it's post, they shechit out the animal, and there's no restriction against doing work with the animal, Avodah and Gizah is only restricted when the animal's alive. If the animal's already shechted or dead, then there's no issue of doing Melocha with Kodushim. Nevertheless, it looks like you're doing Avodah with the Kodushim. And Rez Rashi says over here, because Shemokrima or the Tzorach Mapuach Shuadain ala Kodoshim. The reason it is because you transact on it beforehand. I mean, nobody's gonna flay an animal in that way, put that much effort into it, unless they have a ready buyer. Because it's so much extra effort and so much work, you'd only do it if you knew you could sell it off. If you can't sell it off, you're not gonna put all that effort in. So you line up the buyer before you flay the animal. That means that you're transacting over a behema of Psule Kodoshim. You're basically selling its hide to this individual pre the shechita of the animal. That's why it looks like you're doing avodah b'kodeshim. Even though, again, it's all done post the shechita, nevertheless, Rashi claims because you're transacting on it beforehand, that makes it like as if you're doing the avodah before the shechita of the animal, which is asur, avodah giza. Others simply say that if we allow you to do this to the animal afterwards, then you're going to end up doing avodah with it before. You're going to think there's no problem with doing these types of activities with the Beima of Sulei Amuktashim. So according to Rashi, this is then can be Divrei HaKol. Even Beit Hillel can agree. Everyone can agree to this position because it's a unique problem in Bechor that even if you believe that a Bechor Baal Mum is not a Kodesh like Beit Hillel and Israelim can eat it, still we don't permit you to do a Voda with it, and that's problematic. Another answer is Rav Yossi B'Rabbi Yavin Omer Gzeira Shemi Gadel Mehem Adarim Adarim. We're fearful that you're going to bring up large flocks of them. As Rashi explains over here, it's not that you're going to have them have babies and you're going to keep them around. That's why we used that expression before. But rather, you need to sell the hide off in this manner beforehand. So you have a choice. You can shech the animal today and then eat the basar and forget about the hide. Or you can wait around till you find someone who's going to buy the hide at the higher price. And then you're going to wait and wait and wait because you'll garner more value if you keep it around. So what people end up doing is going to keep around all their psulei amuktashim. So adarim adarim doesn't mean they're going to have offspring. Just simply means you're going to keep all your psulei amuktashim until you find a buyer for the hide. And we don't want you doing that. Because if you keep it around, there's a risk of giza vavoda. The longer you keep it around, there's more chance that somebody's going to do something wrong with the animal and they're going to do giza vavoda of the animal. And after the hudatakala, it's going to cause a problem. So we want, with regards to psulei amuktashim, to get it out of the picture as fast as possible. Allowing you to flay the hide in this manner would make it actually counterproductive because you'd end up keeping it around until you could sell it for that higher price. And therefore, we don't want you to do it. So once again, Rashi says this is Divrei HaKol. Everybody can subscribe to this, Gzeira. And even Beit Hillel might agree that it's problematic. So that's the way Rashi reads it, that these two answers over here, the latter two answers are going back to the beginning and saying, no, it doesn't have to be a dat yachid, each line of the braita. Rather, everybody can agree because these are unique circumstances which would demand that we make an zero intervene, even though there's no kedusha with regards to psulei mekdushim or with regards to the bechor baal mum. The Rambam seems to have a dissenting view over here, and he feels like these answers are a continuation of the previous answers, which would mean that they're only according to Beit Shammai. So that would mean that these two dinim are only true according to Beit Shammai, and that means Beit Hillel will disagree. Obviously, that have a nafkamina l'alocha. According to Rashi, where even Beit Hillel agrees to these positions, then we possibly like Beit Hillel l'alocha. Maybe these issues are real issues for Bechor Baal Mum, and you would not be permitted to be margilin according to Beit Hillel. On the other hand, according to the Rambam, if this is all in the sheet of Beit Shammai, that Beit Hillel always believes you can do margilin because they believe that a Bechor Baal Mum has no kedusha. And then you'd come to a different psak halacha. Okay, next Mishnah. Bechor she'achazo dam. You have a bechor that has some sort of blood clot, some sort of pooling of the blood. Or it's possible that it's showing reddish tint. It has some excess bleeding that's coming from it. So that could be achazot dam. And the solution to that problem is to let the blood. Cut the animal and draw some blood out. That's true in their day, medicinally, both for animals and human beings, that they thought bloodletting was, it was some sort of efficacious treatment for many things. So, afilu meit, emekizino. Even if the animal is going to die from this ailment, you're not allowed to do a kaza d'adam, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda prevents you or precludes you from doing such. It's clear here that he doesn't think, if you don't make a mum that's permanent in it, that that would not be permissible. He is worried that if we allow you to make a mum in it that is not a permanent mum, then you'll come to do it even when it is a permanent mum. And when it's a permanent mum, he thinks it's problematic to allow you to do letting of the blood by making a mum in it, because you're not allowed to make a mum in a bechor. That's true of a real mum you're not allowed to make. So then Rabbi Yehuda extends that to even things that are not real mumim, even a mum over, he won't let you do it because adam bahula mumono, person's worried about losing their money, and therefore if you let him do it where it's not a real mum, he'll do it anyway when it is a real mum as well. You're allowed to do a kazat adam, as long as you don't make a mum in it. If you do make a mum in it, you may not shef based on that mum. So the Chachamim allow you to do a kazat adam, as long as you don't make a permanent mum in it. As long as it's a mum over, then it's fine. Whereas, if you make a real permanent mum in it, you shouldn't have done it, but if you do it, we will not permit you to eat the bechor based on that. Because we don't want people taking advantage of the situation and saying, oh, I was doing a kazat adam, I didn't mean to, I was doing a mum over, I made it to a mum kavua. Now he gets the benefit then of the bechor being a bechor b'amum. We don't want him benefiting from that. Now the Chachamim take the same position, which is, as Rashi notes, adam bahua memono. Person is worried about their possessions. So if you tell him he can't do anything, he's going to actually do worse. He's going to do whatever he wants. If you give him an option, an outlet to deal with it, then he'll deal with it in the right way. So if you offer him the opportunity to bloodlet where it's a mum over and not a mum kavua, that's what he'll do. And therefore the Chachamim permit that. Mum kavua they won't allow. But if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda and we don't allow him to do anything, the person's not going to listen to you anymore because he's going to say, I'm going to lose my whole cow on this, forget it, I'm going to let it. And then they'll end up doing whatever they want rather than doing what is proper in this context. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Yakiz, Apu Pisho Sebo Mum. You can do whatever you want. You can let the blood, even if you make a permanent mum in it. There's no restriction, there's no problem. Obviously, Rabbi Shimon is subscribing to his Shita throughout Shas, which is, Dabar Shenu Mitkavein is Mutar. If it's unintentional, then it's not a problem. Well, obviously, you have to ask, isn't it a psik reshe over here? Isn't it automatic that it's going to happen? And then you have to differentiate between Dabar Shenu Mitkavein and psik reshe. But Rabbi Shimon's Lashita Do, the Dabar Shenu Mitkavein is Mutar. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda, who's a dissenting opinion against Rabbi Shimon, believes Dabar Shenu Mitkavein is Asur. So therefore, you do have a problem if you make a mum in it, even accidentally, even unintentionally. If you make a mum in it, you're still going to be accountable. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda says, no bloodletting. Not even things that are mum over, which should be permitted even according to him, because you might make a mum that is permanent. And that mum that's permanent, even though it was unintentional, it's problematic for you, and we won't let you do that. Bechor she'achazot dam, the bechor that has this blood problem, megizin lo at adam, b'makom she'ein osim bo mum. You'll have to do a kazat adam, bloodletting, in a place where it doesn't make a mum, v'emegizin lo at adam, b'makom she'osim bo mum, divi Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion, that similar to what the Chachamim said in our Mishnah, that's what Rabbi Meir says over here. Chachamim omrim, ap makom she'osim bo mum, you can make it whatever you want. You can even do it in a place where it'll make a permanent mum. Just that permanent mum won't help you out in terms of making it into a bechor ba'mum. So Tosafot and tomorrow's daf was going to say, you see from here that the Braita and the Mishnah must be speaking about two different cases. Because here, the Chachamim here have a different opinion than the Chachamim and the Mishnah. And therefore, we'll see this tomorrow, Balei Tosafot differentiate and say that the case here in the Braita is different than the case in the Mishnah. And therefore, you can't compare their opinions here to the opinions of the Mishnah. Not only can you make such a mum, like the Chachamim say, but you can even shecht it then on that mum. It becomes a bechor ba'mum, and you can shecht based on that. Even if it dies, we don't allow you to do bloodletting. So it's the same as Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah. Matni lei Rabbi Lazar de Brei. Rabbi Lazar said this bright over to his son. V'amri la Rabbi Chia de Brei. Some say that Rabbi Chia was telling over the brayta to his son. when they brought the Braita down, they suggested that the machloket that's in our Braita is similar to a machloket that we find in a Mishnah in Truma. It's not. Chavicho Truma, Shnolad Basafek Truma. You have a barrel full of wine or Truma that then became Tamei Misafek. We don't know if it has Truma. But you have a problem now. Because if it is Truma Tehora, the only thing you're allowed to do with it is to drink it, to utilize it properly. You can't do anything else with it. If it's Trumat Mea, then you can do Ziluf with it. Then you can, if it's oil, you can burn it off. I mean, there are other options. But because you don't know if it's Tahor or Tamei, you can't do either thing now because you're caught in a catch-22. So now what do? Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Imaitam b'makoma torfa. If it's in a place that there's high risk of Tuma, Yenichenu b'makoma mutzna. You move it into a place that it's protected so that no Tuma is caused to it. Imaitam migula yichasena. And if it was open, cover it up to protect it. You still have to be mishmeret trumatai. You have to protect the truma from becoming tamei. Even though it's already a safek truma, you still have to stop any new truma from coming in. If it's in a place where it's safe away from truma, now you should take it to a place where it could become tamei. If it was covered, then you galena, open it up. Expose it. You're not actively making it tamei, but you are passively putting it into a position where it can become tamei in order to solve the problem. Because if you don't make it tamei, you're going to be stuck and this is going to go to waste. So at least if it becomes tamei, really, and we know for certain it's tamei, at that point, you can use it like trumat mea would be utilized. Don't touch it. Sit up there passively. So you have three opinions here. One opinion is you got to protect it from becoming tamei. One opinion that he exposed it to become tamei. And one opinion says, back away, don't touch it. Rabbi Meir ki Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Meir's opinion is like that of Rabbi Eliezer, where Rabbi Meir says, you're allowed to do what is necessary if you don't make a mum. But if you're going to make a mum, we tell you to stay away from it. So similarly over here, Rabbi Eliezer says, if it's b'makom tuma, protect it. Don't allow it to become tamei. We don't allow you, even though you are doing something that is productive, constructive, we don't let you do it, and we say, protect it from becoming tamei. And similarly, by the case of the Bechor, Rabbi Meir says that if it is productive, we allow you to let the blood. That's only if you don't make a mum. We don't allow you to make a mum. So it's only when it's productive, but it doesn't somehow degrade the item. So where by the Bechor, it makes it into a Bechor b'mum. By the Truma, it makes it into Truma Tmeya, we protect against that degradation of the item. V'Rabbanon, to Rabbi Yeshua, the Rabbanon who say that you can do whatever you want, you can let the blood, whether it makes a permanent mum, whether it doesn't make a permanent mum, you can let the blood, that's like Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua says, if you're doing it in a constructive form, we're going to let you do that. We're going to allow you to expose the Truma to Tuma because that's constructive in nature. So too, the Rabbanon over here say, make a mum in the animal because it's constructive. You're letting the blood, you're saving the animal. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Gamliel. And Rabbi Yehuda, who says, don't touch it, says, hands off. He's like Rabbi Gamliel over here says, hands off. Just leave it the way it is. Wherever it is now, leave it where it is. Don't touch it at all. Now Gemara says, Mimai, why do you have to say that these two braitot are parallel? Dilma, kan lo kamara, mi meyer, hotam. Maybe Rabbi Meir, over here by the Bechor, the Ka'avi Biyadayim, because over here you're doing it actively. Avahacha, the Groma, Karim Yeshua Svirle. By Truma, which is only passive, maybe he would agree. The reason he says by the Bechor, you can't make a mum in it to do the Kazad Adam, is because then you're actively making it into a Bechor Ba'mum. That's why he only allows it when you don't make a mum. But here by the Truma, you're not making the Truma Tmeya, you're just leaving the Truma exposed to Tuma. That's Groma. That's causing it, it's indirect, it is passive, that might be okay according to Rabbi Meir. So you don't have to say their opinions are correlated. And maybe by the case of Truma, Rabbi Lezer says, you have to cover it up, you have to protect it. Because there's a possibility that Eliyahu Navi will come and tell us that the Safek Tuma was that it was never Tamei. And if it's never Tamei, then you're exposing it to Tuma was the wrong thing to do. Over here, if you don't let the blood, the animal's going to die. So then, who says that waiting around is a good idea? Maybe by the case of Truma, protecting is a good idea, because there's a possibility that that protection will have utility, which is that if Eliyahu shows up, he can tell you it's Tor. Over here, leaving the Bechor around and not doing the Kazad Adam is not necessarily valuable because it's going to die then, and that's not a good idea. So maybe he won't agree with Rabbi Meir. Therefore, Rabbanan Sfirli, and therefore he holds like the Rabbanan that even making a mum would be okay. Maybe right before the Rabbanan say you can make a mum in it, because what's the alternative? Let it die? That's not a good choice. So if you have to let it die, better to make a mum in it than to let it die. But the case of the Truma, Shema Yabo Eliyahu v'yitarena. Maybe Eliyahu Navi will come and be mitaherit. Koke Rabbi Eliezer Sfirlu, and the whole like Rabbi Eliezer. So maybe the Rabbanan over there will agree you should protect it. Don't leave it exposed. Don't let it get become tamei. Vatkan glo kamai Rabbi Yehuda Hocha. Maybe by Truma, Rabbi Yehuda says it's din the kavin biyadayim. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, who says they don't touch the Bechorah, because you're actively causing a mum. V'hotam to groma, over there, which is groma hama, could Rabbi Yeshua severely. Maybe even holds like Rabbi Yeshua that you can expose it and leave it exposed to the Tumah. V'hotam lo kamai Rabbi Gamliel, hotam. Maybe Rabbi Gamliel over there says hands off. The Shema v'yel Eliyahu will be tirenu. Because maybe Eliyahu will come and tell us it's Tor. So he says, keep your hands off. Avahocha, the Yeshua like might, could Rabbanan severely. But over here by the Bechorah, where if you leave it, it might die, maybe you'll hold like the Rabbanan. So what the Gemara points out is that creating a parallel between these two brightos is not useful because the reasons behind their positions really differ. There's a very different circumstance in the case of Bechor where the animal's life is at risk if you touch it. But number two is it has the weakness that it's biyadayim. Whatever damage you do is actively doing that damage, making it into a mum. So that's the side of Bechor. By the Truma, you're overdoing everything passively. On the other hand, if you secure the Truma, there's a possibility that it could be Tahor, and Eliyahu Levi can come and rescue it. So each one of them is a Tzad Kula and Tzad Chumra, and therefore it's not clear that you would have to parallel their opinions in one to the other. Both, Hocha B'Krai B'Ligi, Hocha B'Krai B'Ligi. In addition, the problem is that the source of the Machloket is a Pasuk. So you can't claim that it's a logical argument, and therefore you can parallel the Tanaic works of each Machloket and each of these Tanaic works is based on psukim. So we're going to do one of the two today, and then we'll do the other one tomorrow. Damar Rav Chiya b'Avam Rav Yochanan HaKol Modim. Everybody agrees, b'mechametz achar mechametz shu chayav. If you make something chametz, and then make it chametz again, that you are chayav dichtiv, lo te'afeh chametz, v'lo te'aseh. As Rashi points out in the Gemara in Menachot, the Gemara says, why do you have to say lo te'afeh chametz? Don't bake it chametz. This is a reference to the Menachot. The menachot are not allowed to be chametz. Now, mechametz akar mechametz doesn't really make sense. If something's already chametz, to make it chametz doesn't really do anything. What they're saying is that in the procedures of making the mincha, every item that you do, every melacha that you do, if you do it while it's chametz, you are chayav. So if somebody allowed it to rise and become chametz, that's one violation. Someone after that bakes it in that way, that's another violation. How do I know that that's true? Because the Torah expresses it in two ways. It says, don't make it chametz, and it says, don't bake it chametz. Now, don't bake it chametz, why do you need that? Lo taseh chametz would cover everything. It's any asiyah would be problematic. So why did the Torah specify lo taseh chametz? To teach you. Just like lo taseh is a maseh yechidi, it's one item in the process of making chametz, just like there you're chayav for that one item in the process, so too you'd be chayav for any one of the activities along the way that includes chametz in it. Whether that's kneading it, whether that's baking it, all of those individuals are going to be chayavim. So that's what it means, mechametz achar mechametz. The one who kneaded the chametz is going to be chayav. The one who bakes the chametz is also going to be chayav. Even though the first one is already chayav making chametz, the second one will also be chayav. So that's mechametz achar chametz. Everybody agrees that you are chayav there. Also, bimisareis achar misareis shu chayav. If you castrate the animal and then castrate it again, you are a chayav. Dichtiv, because the pasuk says, "Ma'och v'katut v'natuk v'karut." You're not allowed to do any of these items to a beimat chulin. And imal koreit chayav, is already chayav koreit. I'll no take lo kosher cane. If you already told me that you can't do karut, why do you have to tell me to do nituk? Nituk is a much stronger form of severing than koreit is. If that's the case, why, if you told me the lighter form of severing is problematic, why do you need to tell me the bigger form of severing is a problem? To teach you, if you do nitika after krita, you're going to be chayav. Which means that if you already caused damage to the animal's reproductive system, and then you cause more damage to it, you're going to be chayav, even though the damage is already done. Rashi over here explains that koreit and nituk are the following. Karat echad ha-beitzim. If one person cut the testicles, But they're still in the scrotum. And then the next one comes and cuts the scrotum off, and then allows the two testicles to go. Then he's going to be chayav. So Rashi says, krita is the cutting of the testicles. The nituk is removing them completely from the scrotum. Tosafot points out that Rashi in other places gives a different definition. And over there Rashi says that nituk is biyad. Nituk is done by hand. And it is the complete severing of the testicles, even though they're still in the scrotum. Whereas karut is with a sakin, is with a knife, but they are still in the scrotum again, and still somewhat tethered to the reproductive system. So Rashi in other places says karut is that the testicles are still attached, you did with a knife, but it was a finer type of cut where you left them somewhat attached. Whereas nituk is you did it by hand, but you completely severed them away, even though they're still in the sack. Both of them are still in the sack, you completely severed them away. Either way, the point is that when you increase the problem, if you do more of the ruining of the reproductive system, you're going to be chayav, even though it was already ruined before you got there. So in all those cases, everybody agrees. The problem is when you put a mum into a baal mum. If you put a mum into an animal that is already a bakar baal mum, the Ramir Savar called mum lo yebo. It says about a bakar, you're not allowed to put any mum into it. Whether it was as a mum beforehand, whether it didn't have a mum beforehand, you're not allowed to put it in. Rabbanan Tzavei Tamim Yehle Ratzon. That in Parshat Amor, when it brings down the list of the mumim over there, it says Tamim Yehle Ratzon. You should bring the animal as a tamim. That's what's going to be Ratzui Yehle Mizbeach. And then it'll say Kol Mum Lo Yebo. That you shouldn't have any mum in it. Now, Kol Mum Lo Yebo, you have to read it differently than Lo Yebo. Kol Mum Lo Yebo is a status. It's a statement of fact. It's not a tzivui. So what you have to read is that Rabbi Meir is reading the word as kol mum lo yehayebo, that you're not going to make any mum in it. Don't make any mum in it. That's how he's reading the pasuk. Ish ki agriv zevach shlamim la'shem lefilei neder on the devaba bakar batzon, tamim yehle ratzon, kol mum lo yehayebo. So kol mum lo yehayebo, Rabbi Meir is reading kol mum lo yehayebo. Don't make any mum in it. Period. That's the rule. And that means irrespective of whether it has a mum or doesn't have a mum in it, there's a restriction against making a mum in the animal. Whereas the chamim say, the pasuk has two parts to it. When is it called mum lo yebo? When can't you make a mum in it? When it was tamim yehle ratzon. When the alternative is, that'll be a tamim that goes on the mizbeach. But that means if it's not a tamim to go on the mizbeach, then there's no longer a restriction in making a mum. So over here, everybody agrees that there is a mum in the animal. That is, it has a blood clot. An animal's going to die from the blood clot. There's no bigger mum than that. Now, even though you can't shech the bechor on that mum, because it's not one of the mumim that qualifies it to be considered psulei mukdashim, or to be considered a bechor that you can eat, nevertheless, it's a mum. I mean, it's a serious problem. The animal's going to die from this problem. So now, the question is, can you now make a mum to deal with that mum? According to Rabbi Meir, if you have a mum in it already, you can't make another mum in it. So just because it has a blood clot, doesn't mean that you can make a mum to release the blood clot to do the kazat adam. The chamim say, well, it's already a baal mum. It's a baal mum anyway. There's no longer a restriction against making a mum. Therefore, you can make a full-fledged mum in it in order to release the dam so that it survives this blood clot. So the chamim are really walking a fine line because technically the blood clot is called a mum over. It's not called a permanent mum, and therefore it doesn't qualify to disqualify the animal from going to his bath. If it was just a regular mum over, we wouldn't let you make a mum in it. We tell you to wait. Over here, this mum over is going to result in the death of the animal, and therefore, it's much more serious. So only in that circumstance, the chamim permits you to make a mum in it. So even if you have an animal with a mum over in it, you're restricted from making mumim in it. On the other hand, we do allow you to make a mum here because of the fact that the mum over here is going to result in death. So they're walking a fine line between saying it's disqualified from the mizbeach, temporarily, and therefore you can make a mum in it, but that's only in situations where that temporary disqualification will result in the animal's death. But if the temporary disqualification will resolve itself, then we're not going to let you make a mum in it. So that's the machloka between them. And as Rashi notes over here, Rabbi Yehuda savar ka Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda is like Rabbi Meir, that you're not allowed to make a mum in a baal mum. Miu gazar mekom sheino se mimum atu makom shosim ba mum. But he just has a gzera on top of that, that just like you can't do in a place where you'll make a mum, We're not going to allow you to make it a place where it doesn't make a mum because we're afraid. If we let you do it there, you're just going to do whatever you want and you're not considerate. Or you might have a problem of davar sheino mitkaven, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that even if you intended to not make a mum, but it ends up being a mum, it's still problematic for you. And then Rabbi Yehuda says, don't do anything over here. But there, their machloket is explained by the psukim. So now Rabbi Meir, hi, tamimi el ratzon, my avilei. What does he do with tamimi el ratzon? The chamim have a pretty good drusha here, which is the only something that's tamim, has a restriction against getting a mum in it. We violate the mute ba mumi karo. That's a case where it was a mum before the hekdesh happened. If there's a mum before the hekdesh, then there's no restriction against putting a mum in it. For the chamim ba mumi karo is pshita, dikla ba amu. It doesn't attain any kedushat aguf. It only gets kedushat berek abayit. It does never gets kedushat aguf. It's like a tree. It's not any different than any other inanimate object. And therefore, of course, you can put a mum in it. Why would there be a question? Ela, the mutei psula mikdashim, lachar pidyonan. He's going to use it to tell you that a psula mikdashim, after they're redeemed, you can make a mum in them. Sagadat chamina ova asire begizeb avoda. Since you're not allowed to do any work with them, you're not allowed to shear them, not any benefit from them, bimumam namelit zasro. Let's say that that kedusha that makes it you can't work and shear them also makes it that you're not allowed to make a mum in them. Kamash malon, that is not the case. And after they are psulei mikdashim and they are redeemed, you can make a mum in them. And even though a b'chor ba'mum is similar to psulei mikdashim, achar pidyonan, nevertheless a b'chor ba'mum still has differences or unique standing. First of all, it can be kadosh even if it had a mumi ikaro. And there's still a restriction of giza v'avoda. And there's an additional restriction of selling it in the marketplace like commercial meat. So even though they're very similar, they're not identical. And so therefore Rabbi Meir will differentiate and say that by psulei mikdashim achar pidyonan, they're making a mumi, it is not problematic. But a b'chor ba'al mum, it still will be problematic to make a mum in it because the b'chor ba'al mum retains a higher level of kedusha in some ways than psulei mikdashim achar pidyonan. Rabbanan nami aktiv kol mum lo yebo. What do they do at the end of the pasuk that says you can't make any mum? Kol mum lo yebo. The gromahu da'ati. That's coming to tell you that you're not allowed to do it even derech grama. The tanya. Because you have a braita that says mum lo yebo. Any elo shlo yitein bo mum. That's only that you shouldn't make a mum in it. How do I know you shouldn't bring some pressed figs or a dough and put on the ear of the bechor? A dog will come and bite it and bite the ear at the same time. Any mum. Meaning not only active mumim, even passive mumim are restricted. So that's how the chachamim learned that pasuk. Alright, we're going to stop here, four lines, down on the top of Lamed Adam and Aleph, and we'll continue with the machloket in Truma based on the psukim tomorrow.